Welcome, everyone. I would like to invite you to the conversation with Dr. Jonathan Ayo, who is the Associate Director, Strategic Research Partnership and International Director at the Royal United Services Institute based in London, UK. He is also a regular commentator on East European affairs for The Guardian, The Independent, The Times and The Observer. And our conversation today is part of the project called Poland's Regional Position in Times of Global Tensions and Rivalry, supported by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Poland within the Public Diplomacy 2021 project. My name is Marcin Chruściel. I am a graduate of the PhD program in political science at the University of Wrocław, and it is my pleasure to conduct this conversation, and we will be talking mainly about Central European cooperation seen from the British perspective. So the first question I would like to ask you, Dr. Ayo, is about the role that Central Europe plays in the British foreign policy. What kind of role it is, in your opinion?
Well, interestingly enough, although I know that in a lot of Central European countries there is a sort of a feeling that London is not terribly interested, the reality is that British policymakers have probably spent much more time thinking about Central Europe and Central European security questions than I would say politicians in Paris, for instance, have done over the period of the last three decades since the end of the Cold War. There are many reasons for that. One reason was that I think there was a feeling in London much earlier on than elsewhere that the security of Central Europe is essential for European general security, that it is difficult to separate security in Central Europe from the security of the rest of the continent. And the second thing is, which is not a great secret, that there was a feeling in London that if the Central Europeans entered NATO and the European Union, they would be able to change these institutions from inside in a way that would be more favorable to United Kingdom long-term strategies. Some people in Berlin and Paris always thought that this was some devious British plan. If you remember, the British were much more keen on the enlargement of the European Union to the Central Europeans, part of that. And there was a suspicion that the British were using the Central Europeans in order to dilute the significance or the cohesion of these pan-European institutions. It was, in fact, a myth. The reality was that there was a strong belief in London that the entry of the Central Europeans into NATO will make NATO a much more pro-American and more cohesive alliance. And in that respect, the British were absolutely correct. They were less correct in the case of the European Union. There was a suspicion in London that the Central Europeans will somehow be able to make the European Union slightly less cohesive and less, therefore, less of a pressure on the UK, and that did not happen for a variety of reasons. Either way, I think it is important to say that the British were probably among the first to take Central Europe seriously, and that the British certainly were among the first to push for the enlargement of the European Union, but also of NATO, after the Americans made the decision that NATO must be enlarged to the countries of the region. So I'm actually, from a purely British perspective, quite proud of the role that we have played in the 1990s in Central Europe. I am less proud of the role that we have played over the last few years in Central Europe, but that, as they say, is another story.
Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what I would like to ask you about in the second question. So how would you describe the cooperation between the UK and the Visegrad Group countries, but seen as a cohesive group? So not as a separate countries, but as a one group. So Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary and Slovakia. How was this cooperation functioning in the recent years?
So as far as London is concerned, as far as the British are concerned, I don't think that the Visegrad Group was ever taken too seriously. Mm-hmm. I think there was a moment, a honeymoon moment, when communism collapsed, the Warsaw Pact collapsed. There was a sort of a feeling in London that perhaps the Visegrad Group is a structure that will encourage regional cooperation in a way that would make it easier to talk about European integration. But I think that was a very short period of time. We're talking about a few years. By the mid-1990s, I would suggest the British did not take the Visegrad Group particularly seriously, unlike the others, for two reasons. First of all, because with a lot of politicians in places like Germany or France, there was this hope that the Visegrad Group will replace the need for integration into NATO and the European Union. Well, as I explained, the British never believed in that. So therefore, that kind of usefulness of the Visegrad Group was not there. But secondly, I think that there was an early understanding in the UK that the Visegrad Group is not sufficient to create a Central European identity within either the European Union or NATO, and that therefore there was very little purpose in assuming that the four getting together would serve any particular interests of the United Kingdom. And of course, as the years went by and countries started moving in different directions within the Visegrad Group, I think there was even an element of irritation or at least disappointment in London with the organization, which was, to be honest, not considered very seriously here in the UK. So, for instance, there was one British hope that the Visegrad Group would be able to increase the defense expenditure of countries like the Czech Republic or Slovakia, or indeed even Hungary. Nothing of the kind has happened. There was hope that there would be a coordination of a policy towards Russia, with perhaps the Czechs and the Slovaks mitigating or slowing down the fears, the historic fears that Poland had about Russia. That didn't happen either. I mean, if you look at the orientation of Hungary today compared to the orientation of Poland today on the subject of Russia, I don't think that there is much in common. So I think that the British contribution to Visegrad was probably zero. And I think it was very early on, probably, I would say, a good 15 years ago, that a decision was made in London that really we're not going to say anything about it, because, of course, any method of cooperation is a good method of cooperation, but in general terms, we're not going to invest very much in it either.
Mm-hmm. So do I understand correctly that the Visegrad Group was perceived from the British side as a political, I would say, format and security format, and the effectiveness of this group in these two dimensions was actually perceived as positive or negative in terms of the British foreign policy?
Well, I don't think it was considered as negative, but it wasn't considered as very positive either. Mm-hmm. Now, if the Visegrad Group pushed a certain policy, united policy, or at least coherent policy in the European Union, then I think you would have found British officials listening to it very, very carefully. But that didn't happen, as we all know. If the Visegrad Group, the other hope that London had was that the Visegrad Group will be what used to be called privately by British officials self-correcting. That mm-hmm. is that if one country moves away from the consensus, the others would be able to influence them into a consensus. And that didn't happen either. I mean, the tilt of Hungary towards Russia and towards China happened regardless of what people in Warsaw were trying to say or do. I mean, it's not a great secret that, you know, the Visegrad has survived because countries have ignored their differences, not because countries have resolved their differences within the organization. So in that respect, I think that there wasn't an anti-feeling, but there was a sense of disappointment. And let's face it, after a while, a sense of just ignoring it, because it wasn't terribly relevant for anything UK foreign policy was interested in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I think it's more clear. And how about the most recent initiatives or of cooperation in Central Europe? I mean, especially Free Seas initiative, which is a broader format and is focused more on infrastructure projects. And is the perception of the UK different towards this initiative, comparing to the Visegrad Group?
I would say it's different, but it's different. Unfortunately, it's different because there is very little attention being paid to it in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a very big mistake. It's a very big mistake for a variety of reasons. I think when the first 3Cs initiative came up, there was a feeling in London that this is a bit of a nostalgia by Poland, you know, going back to Piłsudski's plans from the 1920s, and that it was a bit of a nuisance, or at least there was a Polish attempt to sort of become the leader of the group. It was also coupled with the fact that there was always a slightly less interest in what was happening in Southeastern Europe, despite the fact that everyone knew that it was in Southeastern Europe that the biggest security crisis took place. So I think I would say that there was just a sense of ignoring this one as far as London was concerned. And I don't think there was a sufficient, I have never met someone in the British political establishment that spent any time on the 3Cs initiative. I have met a lot of people who didn't know anything about the 3Cs initiative when I asked them. So unfortunately, I think this is not because of a positive decision in one way or another. It is simply because of neglect. It's also, I would say, perhaps because the initiative really came into being just as Britain got absorbed in its own internal problems with Brexit and everything else. So there was a sort of a sense that this was perhaps a bit too much for us. I think the strategic implication was not realized. The strategic implication of creating transport routes and facilitating routes in order to prevent the, quite frankly, rather strange situation where we had all the transportation routes going east-west, but none going north-south. That kind of thing came slightly in discussions in NATO over the last few years in terms of improving transport infrastructure, but I don't think it was ever considered by Britain as part of a Three Seas initiative. And I'm not sure even today whether one could say that there is a strong British understanding of what the Three Seas initiative is really all about.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that this may change in the next years, and that the UK position will be more, I would say, pragmatic, and the political establishment will be more interested in this infrastructure project, because also from the business point of view?
Well, yes. I mean, I think it will change. Paradoxically, I don't think it will change from the business point of view so much. Mm-hmm. Because although there are very large British construction firms, it is a field that is not very strong in terms of government support in the UK. And I don't think there is a great hope in the UK that this is going to be an area where British construction firms are going to make a lot of money. Also, it's fair to say that a lot of the projects, the infrastructure projects that are in the Three Seas Initiative require quite a lot of forward capital investment, which again introduces the whole question of multilateral institutions like a European Development Bank, etc. And again, that reduces the scope for a direct British interest. So I think that there is a likelihood of a higher security interest, depending on how the current showdown between Russia and the West is going to develop. I think that there is a greater understanding now that infrastructure is a security question number one, and that if you want to encourage the sort of cooperation between the countries of the region, the Three Seas Initiative is a very useful project. But it is still, I think, very early on. And I would say it really would depend on how the Ukrainian situation develops, because that could change very much the perspective of London about regional security. So I think what has changed is that with Brexit now out of the way, there is a greater attention to NATO than ever before. There was always a great attention to NATO in London, but there is a particular one now because, remember, NATO is now the only pan-European institution in which the British are involved and are influential. So there are many reasons why NATO is an important consideration for us. But at the same time, I would say that the interest will remain limited. I think the best that could be said is that Britain will not be an obstacle. And will be very happy if it develops. There is no one in London that thinks that the project is somehow against our interests. But I am suspicious about people predicting that suddenly there is going to be an enormous interest developing in the UK for such projects.
Mm-hmm. So let me now ask you about possible future relations and cooperation between the UK and Poland. Because within the framework of the European Union, these two countries, they used to have common goals, actually. Quite similar vision of the European integration with, you know, based on the free market, not so much centralized in Brussels. But now we are in a different situation. We are in a post-Brexit world. Also, the European Union has changed from since that time. So what are the prospects for future cooperation between UK and Poland?
Here I'm glad to be very optimistic. I mm-hmm. think the prospects are very high, and very high indeed, and this is not just propaganda. There is a number of very important matters here. First, there is the fact that Poland is not a foreign policy issue in the UK, it's increasingly becoming a domestic policy issue. you're talking about over 1 million Poles in the UK as permanent residents. You're also talking about at least 500,000 people who remember their Polish origins from the first wave of immigration immediately after the Second World War, when the communist dictatorship was established in Poland. So you're talking about one of the largest communities in the UK around. In fact, the latest census of the national census in the UK will indicate that, curiously, most people, when they talk about other ethnic groups, think of people from the Caribbean or Africa. In fact, the largest single ethnic group in the UK is what the statistics call white, comma, others, namely people from other European countries, with Poland as probably, well, certainly the single largest category in that. So I repeat, for decades to come, Poland will not be just a foreign policy issue in the UK. Just go to any British supermarket and you can tell it already by just looking on the products that are on the shelves, which is important because it gives an incentive to governments to be involved in the question. It's not just a foreign policy matter. Secondly, there has been a realization for the last 20 years or so that when it comes to security questions, Poland is one of the biggest actors. And in 99% of the time, it is in the same sort of perspective like us on the security questions. So again, it's not an accident that after Brexit, one of the first security treaties signed by the UK was with Poland. Therefore, I mean, you could argue that we wanted the Polish cooperation in order to get a different Brexit deal, perhaps. But the reality is that Poland was one of our first countries, in fact, the first country with which we signed a bilateral security treaty, which remains in force and is very important. The third reason is that Poland is a major actor in NATO, which again dictates a much closer policy with us. And sadly, it also is in the front line of the security divide. If you look at the current developments in Ukraine, even if the Russians do not invade the Ukraine again, I think it's pretty obvious what is happening, that a division line into spheres of influence is being created in Europe. So I hope that I'm wrong, but I suspect I'm not wrong, that at the end of the day, Poland will remain the frontline state in European security. It's sad because it would have been better if we didn't return to that role of Poland in the front line, if countries like Belarus or Ukraine were part of European structures. But I think we can agree that this is not likely to happen anytime soon. So in strategic terms, Poland remains key to European security and therefore key to the UK. So it's always has been acknowledged in what, as one of the big players in Europe. Very often there were some tensions. So for instance, when Poland took the lead in managing the Ukrainian crisis in 2014, there was a sense of irritation in London about why Poland did it with the Germans and the French at the time, but not with us. But I mean, these are small matters. The reality is that at the end, there is an understanding that Poland is a key partner. And finally, if the Brexit deal, at the beginning, the British hoped that the Brexit deal would include questions of security cooperation with the European Union. It was the European Union which was not interested in that at the time. It wanted to discuss first the price of tomatoes rather than questions of security. Well, fine, we have now decided on the price of tomatoes, but it's now not very interesting for the British to discuss the question of security with the European Union. So what you see is increasingly a lot of bilateral British security arrangements with individual European countries. And again, in that respect, Poland is really at the top of that category.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that we can expect a closer cooperation in terms of security and military cooperation between the UK and Poland in the next years?
Oh, yeah, without any doubt. Without any doubt, I think that this is considered as absolute given by both sides. Of course, one could argue in what shape it will be, but I think it's without question. There may be questions in Poland itself about its political direction after the next elections. That's for the Poles to decide. But in general terms, as far as London is concerned, I think there is a feeling that the relationship are only beginning to develop rather than reaching the peak. Look at the latest border crisis with Belarus, the one country that immediately decided to send troops was the UK. Now, I would not pretend that what we sent there, I think it's over 100 soldiers, engineers, is an enormous thing, or that the British contribution saved the situation. But I think the interesting thing was the British instinct to suggest that we should send troops and not to start, like a lot of European countries have done, in criticizing whether the Polish position was the right position or whether it encourages one view of the government as opposed to the other view of the government. I think there was a feeling that this is not the time to discuss such matters. The key was to make sure that the Lukashenko little trick, little dirty trick, is not going to succeed. In that respect, I think that to me was quite telling in terms of the impact that it has had. And I think it's in general the feeling we are less, we do not take the view that there is anything that can be done in Europe without Poland.
So maybe to sum up our conversation, I would like to ask you whether Poland is considered in the eyes of the British foreign policy as a regional leader in Central Europe.
Yes, absolutely. It's considered as a regional leader in the Central Europe. I mean, you don't need me to tell you, this is the biggest country. And as long as it continues to develop economically faster than some others, it would also remain the biggest economy, and in many respects, it would have its position even more enhanced. So I think there is a realization that that is the case. There is also a sort of London is quite comfortable with that situation because the Polish security interests are very similar to ours. So there isn't a feeling that somehow Polish leadership in Central Europe is somehow going to reflect badly on British interests. I think that there is a feeling that Poland could do more, and the real areas in which it could do more is on Hungary, for instance, and where Hungary is going now. On getting a closer relationship with the second biggest country in the former communist world, which is Romania. And there is, to be honest, has always been, I don't know, a tendency in Poland not to take Romania very seriously. But the reality is, and perhaps this is the development of the three C's initiative, the reality could be that actually the two countries that fit each other in security terms best are actually Romania and Poland on two sides of Europe. And so I think there's a view from London that if Poland is to take a leadership in the region, which with which we are very comfortable, then really Poland should take a leadership in the region. Mm-hmm. And it should not just believe that it has to be number one, but should be number one in practical terms, which means at times being very direct with Hungary when you have a Hungarian prime minister playing some of Moscow's games. It would also mean being very direct with Prague and Bratislava about defense contributions and about taking their military seriously. So I would say, by all means, be a leader, but be a leader.
Mm-hmm. So just to be sure, because when you were saying about the quite close relations between Hungary and Russia, you suggest that Poland should somehow react in this matter to maybe, I don't know, start asking or demanding from Hungary to stop these relations with Russia and to be in the Visegrad group, united in terms of the policy towards East?
Well, it's difficult to tell a country. I mean, I'm not sure that Poland would have been very happy to be told by others what to do. So I'm not sure that, I mean, in practical terms, yes. I think we need to be honest with the Hungarians that some of the things that they do at the moment are not very useful for the security of the region. I think people in Warsaw know it very clearly. I think the question is that ultimately Hungary needs Visegrad more than Poland needs Visegrad. And I think Budapest needs to be reminded of that fact. It doesn't have many friends in the region. The Visegrad is one of the few structures that it does have, regional structures. So I think that it should be reminded that if you want to be a member of the Visegrad group, then there are certain obligations, not only advantages. Furthermore, if that doesn't work, then I would suggest that one should start thinking about whether the Visegrad group should be enlarged. I suspect that Budapest will get the message if Warsaw was to suggest that the Romanians, for instance, should enter the group. You see, the reality is that the group is simply not cohesive enough, and the general instinct in Warsaw, which is to say, oh, we'll keep the group because it was there for 20 years and it's cohesive, is actually, to the British mind, not particularly useful, because Poland is not getting the value, the benefits that it could get from such a regional structure. So I'm not suggesting putting pressure on the Hungarians in a very crude way. I'm merely suggesting explaining to all the members of the Visegrad group that if they are serious about it in the 21st century, because this is a very different situation from what we had in the end of the 20th century. But if we are serious about this, then countries need to pull together security questions. It cannot be that they meet every 6 months just to take a photograph.
So, Dr. Eil, thank you very much for your thoughts and your comments, because I think they are very refreshing. This British perspective for us here in Central Europe. I would like to also thank you to our listeners for our attention. And I would like to invite you to also listen to the other podcasts we have already recorded with the V4 diplomats and representatives. So, Dr. Eil, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.